Eric Griffin is a longtime stand-up comedian, actor, and podcaster. You can find his work at ericgriffin.com. That's Eric with a K. That does include his podcast, Griffin with Griffin. Great podcast. And he's going to be here in Austin honing that stand-up craft this weekend, headlining at Joe Rogan's Comedy Mothership. I tell you to go to comedymothership.com to snag tickets. The shows are sold out. However, you should still check out a show there. Go to comedymothership.com to find those future shows that do still have tickets left. Eric, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
I am good.
Cool. Congratulations on fatherhood and good luck with that shit in the first year or so. I know there's a lot of joys, but it's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's been crazy. Is this fire? The fire might be too much, huh? Is that too much?
It's up to you.
Let me go with some stars instead of fire. That just looks like, yeah, there we go. That's better.
Hey, I heard you talking on a recent Riffin' with Griffin about how it's ridiculous to think that the NFL is that rigged. Do you have a team that you like?
I like the Raiders. Okay. You know, because I'm from L.A. I was born and raised in L.A. I also like the Colts. I don't know why. I was just a big Peyton Manning fan, so I really enjoyed the Colts, you know. But it's just like they feel cursed to me.
Both franchises, as a matter of fact, at this point.
Yeah. But maybe this Antonio Pierce guy is going to be the thing that's going to be the difference. But man, it just feels like some franchises, man, they're never going to get over the hump. You know, I feel like that.
Well, the Raiders for the longest time, they were just beholden to Al Davis's insanity. It's like Cowboys fans. Yeah. Now I'm not a Cowboys fan. I'm surrounded by him here in Austin though. It just amuses me each and every year to watch Jerry get older and older.
He's the Joe Biden of the NFL. You know what I mean?
Seriously, you're waiting for him to start sniffing kids' hair before too long. And
yeah, it's
unfortunately
crazy.
For a lot of my friends, they realize that also. They're like, man, we're completely screwed until this guy dies. And until then, we may have a good roster, but there's no way we're making another Super Bowl run.
Yeah, they do feel cursed ever since what he did to Jimmy Johnson. I don't think the team has been the same since, you know?
Yeah. Think the idea of karma can be overrated, but if it does exist, that's a great example, right?
Yeah. But it's like, also, it's like, you know, just, it's like, this isn't about you. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, he makes it all about him. And I get it. I mean, it's like, but, you know, it sucks, though. Like, the thing is, what's the guy supposed to do? They had 9 all pros last year. 9. So it's not like Jerry Jones is putting together a team and signing off on a roster that you go, well, this team doesn't have a chance. That team should go to the Super Bowl. You know what I'm saying? Like, that team should go to the Super Bowl. They got, like, skill position every, like, they had a, they have a Hall of Fame person on the offensive line. They got, you know, Micah Parsons. They got 2 great corners. They got an all pro receiver. Dak Prescott played the best he's ever played in his whole career. They've got 12 win seasons in a row. It's like Jerry Jones is like, I did what I'm supposed to do. And at what point? At what point do you go, it seems like it's a higher power involved in this. You know what I mean? At what point do you go like, well, what more do they have to do? And I think that, like, that's where he's at. So, in one hand, I do agree with you. It's like, Jerry Jones, what are you doing? Like, is he crazy? But on the other hand, I'm like, this guy knows how to put together a football team. Say what you will, but he knows how to put together a football team. They just can't get over the hump. And is that the curse of the Cowboys, or is it just, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I think the roster construction is partially because he did hand off some of that responsibility to his son, Steven, and some other people within the organization. Now, he still has final say, so of course, but he is less emphatic in making those decisions. But you're right. This roster was good enough last year to make a run.
It's been good enough 3 years in a row. Yeah, they won 12 games 3 years in a row. That's a Super Bowl winning roster, you know?
But the two commonalities and maybe the two most important aspects of a football team being good in the postseason are your head coach. Yes, Mike McCarthy does have a Super Bowl title, but he is routinely outcoached on the sidelines. And Dak, for as good as he was statistically last year, time and time again, has not gotten it done in the postseason. And look, his numbers.
He's a fourth round. What is he, a fourth round pick? I mean, like, when's the last fourth round pick to win a Super Bowl? You know, like, this is a league full of, like, really fantastic quarterbacks now. And you either have to have one of those generational talents, one of those guys. If you don't have one of those guys, the team around you's got to be good. And even in that example, they haven't won the Super Bowl. Look, as good as San Francisco 49ers are with their roster, and that roster is stacked, they're not going to win because they got Brock Purdy. That guy's, you know what I mean? Like, yeah, he's serviceable. He's fine. But, like, put Joe Burrow on the 49ers. You know what I'm saying? Like, put, what's his name from the Bills? Put that guy on the Dallas Cowboys. Put Josh Allen on the Dallas Cowboys. Are you kidding me? So it's like, at a certain point, having the guy at quarterback is important. I think Dallas should cut ties with Dak Prescott, and I think they're going to. That's why they didn't sign him or re-sign him. They'll re-sign him if they go to, like, say, the NFC Championship. Let's say they have a great game in the NFC Championship and lose, or even if they get to the Super Bowl and lose, Dak will be back, and he'll be the highest-paid quarterback in the league. But if not, you know, if they go, look, we're getting the same thing from you, all right? So bye-bye. Thank you very much. You're gonna be in our Ring of Honor. And he'll move on, and he'll still make $40 million from another team. You know, there'll be a team out there that'll sign him for 3 years, like Kirk Cousins, and you know, while they're, like, trying to draft their next guy, and, like, you know, it'll just be like that.
Yeah, I guess Cousins was better than nothing for Atlanta. As somebody who watched a lot of Bears football last year, lived in Chicago for a little bit, but the honest answer is that I had Justin Fields on my fantasy team. Justin Fields is better than a lot of people realize. I think Justin Fields with that Falcons.
Oh, run, you're one of those guys, huh? Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. And look, he finally
had a decent receiver. Hey, man. 3 years in the league, right? He won 7 games in 3 years. Stop it.
It's not all on him. He had nothing around him the first couple of years. Last year he got DJ Moore, and they were starting to pick up some steam before he suffered a thumb injury.
Seven
with weapons around him. He is a good games. Quarterback. His offensive line was trash also, and the coaches on the sidelines. It doesn't matter what were actively trying to discourage him from using his legs at the start of last season.
They don't want him to get hurt.
That's part of it, but you have to let a guy do what he's really good at. He can be a good thrower, but his
because that's one. How many Super Bowls? How many Super Bowls has an athletic running quarterback won in the history of the league?
So if you're talking about a run-first quarterback, the answer is zero. But a guy like Pat Mahomes has great athleticism and uses.
Come on, man. That's arguably the greatest thrower of the ball ever. It's like him, Marino, and Aaron Rodgers for physically throwing the football. That guy's a unicorn. Take him out of all discussions. Mahomes.
It's like when you asked the last time there was a fourth round pick win a Super Bowl. It's like, well, I could bring up Tom Brady right now, but that's also the cheating answer, you know. Like in terms,
that's what I'm saying. But it's rare. I'm saying, what I'm talking about is, like, it's rare. The unicorns don't count, man. What I'm saying is, like, Justin Fields, maybe he'll get another chance in Pittsburgh. You know, they'll be like, hey, we need you to, like, ball manage. I think he's going to get that job. I think he's the future of that franchise. Russell Wilson's going to play 1 year. Hopefully he proves himself. If they go to the Super Bowl or if they beat the Kansas City Chiefs in the playoffs and get to the Super Bowl, Russell Wilson will be the quarterback for, like, the next 3 or 4 years. You know, they'll have a situation. They're going to have a situation. But if he's just, like, whatever, you know, because they can already win 10 games without with you and me at quarterback. Okay, so that Mike Tomlin has never had a losing season. That guy's one of the greatest coaches ever, but he also can't get over the hump because he needs a talent. So is it going to be Russell Wilson or is it going to be Justin Fields? We'll see.
So they already decided not to pick up Justin Fields' fifth-year option, which would have been a discount for them versus, let's say, they like him this year, having to slap the franchise tag on Justin Fields. But I think you're probably right. I mean, it's going to be Russell Wilson who starts out with that job. But talking to Broncos fans, including Brad Williams last week, who was in town for Moon Tower Comedy Festival, Russell Wilson's stats were better this last season in Denver. But Brad was like, look, that was a lot of checkdowns, and that was a lot of them having to throw late because they were losing football games. Russell Wilson doesn't have it anymore. I think that's the case, too. So if and when Justin Fields...
I don't know about that.
with a decent running back room with Najee Harris, Jalen Warren, and some okay receivers also. I realize people are saying George Pickens is a bit of a head case. Congratulations. Welcome to a wide receiver in the NFL. These guys, what they do.
Exactly.
It's whether or not that diva wide receiver matrix is still tilting in favor of the talent outweighing the off-the-field distraction. And I think George Pickens is that. Justin Fields will prove some doubters wrong if he gets that chance in Pittsburgh next season.
Yeah, I agree, man. I agree. But I think that Russell Wilson was better than people giving him credit for, you know, and think of all the things that he had to overcome while playing for that team. He was not wanted by the coach, and he still managed to win 6 out of 7 game stretch. If they hadn't like done that, he probably would have won more games if they hadn't taken him out. So I think he's still a serviceable quarterback. And he's a check down quarterback. You mean like when he won the Super Bowl and went to another? you know what I mean? So it's like that's who he was when he was going to Super Bowls. So I think that's all Pittsburgh needs. That's exactly what Pittsburgh needs. They need a quarterback who is not going to make mistakes, don't lose the game for us. If he had his stats, listen, if the stats he had in Denver, you transfer that to Pittsburgh last year, they probably would have won 12 games. And won a playoff game at least. So I don't know.
They wish they had somebody.
I disagree with Brad Williams.
They wish they had somebody who was at least good enough at checking down last year.
That's what I'm saying. And they still won. They still went to the playoffs. Is what I'm saying. That's a testament to their franchise, to Mike Tomlin's system.
I'm actually a fan of the guy who's slated to be your Raiders starting quarterback this upcoming season, Gardner Minshew. Now, I was acquaintances with his college coach, Mike Leach, back in the day before his unfortunate sudden passing. Minshew is a gunslinger, of course, as you saw with the Colts last year. But he's also a guy who gets the ball out quickly, and he has that moxie too. He has that winner's moxie. So I think he is an upgrade over whoever the hell it was y'all were rolling out at quarterback last season, whether it was Jimmy Garoppolo or the rookie. I think did Brian Hoyer start a game or two for you guys?
It was an absolute mess. But you know, I think that the locker room likes the coach, and we'll see if they show up for a full season. You know, it's one thing. I think they caught people by surprise in the end last year, but now moving forward, it's going to be a little different. You know, now moving forward, they're going to have to. Because teams are going to be ready for him now. You know what I mean? You know, teams are going to be prepared. They're going to be like, okay, the Raiders do this. You know, so we'll see. I mean, it's like, it's tough. I mean, if you think about it, like in the past 10 years, there's always the same teams seem to be, you know, getting far in the playoffs. And it's like there's so many other teams that they never break through. So now we got teams like Detroit finally breaking through. But can they get over the hump, you know? And that's the thing. That's the hard part, is taking that step from being like mediocre team to like getting to the playoffs and advancing. That seems to be a road that people could do through the draft. They're really terrible. They build up all these draft picks and players, and things happen. Things fall their way. And then they get to that point. Now, what gets you over the hump? Go back to our original talk. It's a great quarterback. Yeah. Like, no matter what the system is and whatever's going on there, when you have that great quarterback that can, like, cover up all those mistakes that people are making, or that can galvanize a team and bring them together. It's very few. There's very few. Like, look what Joe Burrow did to Cincinnati. Look, they haven't won yet, but we're looking at them now like a franchise that can win. And it's because of him. So it's like, you know, and then when you get it, like, again, San Francisco 49ers is a great test case, because you look at them and go, wow, that team is phenomenal, but they have yet to win against a team this past year who the most drops in football, not 1,000 yard receiver, I believe, was on that team. Okay.
Oh, they were terrible. Even Travis Kelce had a down year too. You're absolutely right about
and
that.
And so, but what kept that team together? So what would you rather have? Would you rather have the great quarterback with the mediocre play throughout the whole year? Or would you rather have a stacked Dallas Cowboys, San Francisco 49ers team with like a so-so quarterback? I mean, we already know what the answer is. We know what the answer is. It's like, I'd rather have Joe Burrow in a terrible, organization than have, you know, Dak Prescott. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that clutch factor is infectious, especially when the most clutch guy is the quarterback. Because guess what happened with that receiving core for Kansas City once the playoffs started? They stopped dropping the football. I think they had like one drop in their three or four playoff games. They already had a really good defense that was up to the task. And even though Pat Mahomes didn't necessarily have his best game in the Super Bowl, he still found ways to make plays to win games, back to the point of using your legs. No, he's not a run-first quarterback, but they deployed his legs really wisely at times in huge situations, picking up first downs or getting huge
yardage
to ultimately win that game in overtime.
No, I totally agree. And by the way, you're making me jealous, so I have to do this.
Oh, man. We're burying the lead here because you got a newborn at home. Anybody follow you or your wife Rachel on social media sees how freaking adorable this kid is. He looks like he's huge for his size as well. But
he's off the charts according to the doctor. The doctor said he's off the charts. That, you know, for tall, like, you know, they do the measurements, and you know, you look at the what do you call it? They have these curves, like this is the average.
Yeah.
So they have the averages, and you know, and so his height was way above the average. So I was like, but she's almost 6 foot. I'm 6'3". Her dad's like almost 7 foot. You know, her brother's 6'5", or you know what I mean. So hopefully, I'm gonna be one of those. I'm gonna be doing this defense, defense.
his name is Wolford. Is that right?
Wolford, like Wolf.
Wolford. Okay. Wolford. And how old is he now?
He's 12 weeks today.
Oh, wow. So we're nearing the 3 month mark.
Yeah. Yeah. He's smiling. You know, it's great.
I mean, look at that adorable smile right there.
I know. Even like these little smirks he does, it's like, it's crazy that he does that. Like, we had this one picture on my social media that it's like, it's on my phone now. I keep it as my thing. It's like, we're like head to head with him. And he had this look on his face that I was like, and we both were like so shocked. Like, look at him. He's like he knew the camera was there. So it's like, it's great. These are great times, but you know, it's about to get tougher. I know, you know, when they start moving more, like right now I could leave them on the changing table and like go wash my hands. You know what I mean? Now it's like, you know, it's going to get to a point where it's going to be like, how did he find the detergent? You know what I mean?
Cover the light sockets now, because otherwise that turns into a little crease that is very intriguing for little fingers to try and stick themselves in. So what has been the biggest thing that you've learned through the first 3 months of fatherhood, Eric?
I guess it's like, this is a strange thing, but you know, I've been working out. Like, I work out like 3 times a week now, you know, and I've been trying to get healthier. I'm trying to eat healthier. I already feel stronger. I already feel like I have, my heart health is better because of that. But you know, the weight loss is about your food. So when you're like, get to a certain age, you just kind of go, oh, you know what? This is me. This is who I am. I'm just going to like live. I'm going to ride this out, you know? And you don't, you know, and you think about that, you're like, well, I'm not really caring about myself, right? But, or the other way is like, yeah, just living my life. You know what I mean? But when someone else comes into your life, a baby, and you start to think about what you need to do for them, it becomes a thing where, oh, you know what? I have to take care of myself for this person. And it's a weird thing because I wasn't taking care of myself for me. You know what I mean? So now I'm like, oh, no, I got to do this. So now I'm like, I feel more focused. I feel more like, you know, I'm trying to work more and like, you know, save money, buy a house, do all these things that I thought before was just kind of like, we're fine, you know, like we live in this townhouse, we're renting, it's fine, we love it. But then it's like, oh, we want a yard, we want a dog, we want to, you know, you start just thinking about the future and like, you know, wanting to survive, especially being an older dad too, you know what I mean? What am I supposed to do, you know? But I always ask the question, like, would you rather be 30 struggling for money with a kid, or be older and be established and now you can do whatever you want? You know, it's, I guess the real answer would be you want to be 25 and rich, right?
Yeah. With the energy to deal with kids also.
With the energy to deal with kids. So it's like, that's another thing too, is like having the energy and like the strength and like, you know, I have my trainer's great. He's like, all right, you have to, like, I'm doing all these exercises where he's like, pick this off the ground, because that's what you're going to have to do. You know what I mean? So I'm doing a lot of squats and lifting up with weights. And he's really great about, like, he's got 3 kids and he's this older dude. So he's like, this is how you do it, you know?
I love how he's going with functional training for you, but not for a particular sport, but specifically to father.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Really, if I'm going for the fatherhood baby Olympics, I'm training for that right now. So it's like, it's pretty great, man. It's quite an experience.
You're so right about fatherhood shifting your perspective on life and death, because even though I was in decent shape when I had each of my two kids, they're 9 and 7 now, by the way, this is them at a much younger age. So 9 and 7, they're starting to become these more independent little humans, and it's incredible. And can talk back to you. So there's some points of frustration that aren't there at 3 months necessarily.
Oh, I
was never somebody who was afraid of death, but every time I get on a plane now, as soon as the plane starts to take off, I find myself anxious and worried for those handful of seconds that something bad is about to happen in this moment. And if something bad happens in this moment, that's it for us. We're done. And then my kids will have to grow up without a dad. Then I have to think that the ability to fly in airplanes is one of humans' greatest inventions and innovations, and that calms me down. But there are moments like that where I'm worried, and it's not necessarily for myself, but it's for my kids. And I think it speaks to you wanting to make sure that you're there for your son and any future offspring for as long as humanly possible, you know?
Yeah, what you're speaking on is, and this is something that, like, this emotion is always there now, and it's fear, you know? It's like, it's just always there for, like, you never thought about these kinds of things, or just like, ooh, you know, it's like, or you'll be outside and I'll be like, but where's the stop sign on this? supposed to be a stop sign on this street right here. Where are the speed bumps? Like, you know, I find myself thinking about things I never thought about before. Or like, you know, just like, I'm a million mile flyer on United. You know, I've been flying forever, but I know exactly what you mean. That plane's a little bit of turbulence. I'm like, oh my God, do I have my will together? You know what I mean? I got to get a living trust. You know, you feel like I'm going to be on the phone, like, you know, whoever finds this, leave all my money to, you know what I mean? So it's like, but you know what I was thinking about though, like, to move away from the morbid of it, but this could probably be even more morbid, is because of AI, what can you even believe anymore?
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you can make, like, somebody can make an AI video, like a last will and testament of just pick a person. And then, like, you know, how do you know that? How can you now verify that that is the person?
We are in scary times. There was already
that's scary, man, right?
We were already in information overload, and now it's even more difficult to decipher what's real and what's fake.
Right.
And there's no good answers, because unfortunately the people most responsible for developing these things haven't put the guardrails or safeguards in place. So it is true.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's
a capitalistic free-for-all, unfortunately.
Yeah, but this is the kind of thing that's like, you know, how people use it is the thing. Like, you know, you don't want to stop innovation. You know what I mean? Like, stopping in, you know, you don't stop innovation, but then you let innovation go wild, and that's like, we're dropping, you know, bombs on countries. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's the, you know what I mean?
Well, just with recent conflicts, we've seen examples of people getting fooled about war footage, or what they thought was war footage that actually came from a video game. But it's being sold as something, and it looks enough like something that you just run with it, versus doing what journalists are supposed to do, which is to check it with a couple of different sources. With social media, that luxury doesn't exist, because we're all so dead set on being the first one to respond to something or pile on whatever trend has started on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter.
Yeah, but see, what was the start of this? You know, I often think about this. It's like, you know, it's like, it's not information overload that I think is the problem. It's verification of that information that's the problem.
Yeah.
So, you know, up to this point, like, I don't know how old you are. How old are you?
46. I'm just five, six years younger than you.
Yeah. So, all right. So you still remember an era where, like, it was only three news programs, and, like, we were supposed to get all, we got all our information there, and we really respected the news. Come to find out that they're full of it too. They always were. Like when you look back at like what Dan Rather was doing, like writing letters, you know what I mean? Like, so what we realize is like misinformation has been going on for a long time. Now there's just much more of it. You know, it's like, you know, and then the, you know, you got people riding their political spectrums, you know, like, you know, you got the, we think everything is on this prism of right and left. And it's like, we're the ones that need to be like, oh, wait, hold on a second. We should probably be like, well, what is my side saying? Is this right? Like, instead, forget about what the other side is saying. Like, you know, if you're a conservative, you shouldn't be like, what, a liberals? No, you should be like, let's make sure our side is in order. But we don't do that. And so that's why, you know, they kept, it's even if you look at a big issue like, say, gun control, right? Like how people fight about guns. The people that are laughing at us are the gun companies. Because we're busy fighting with each other about if we should have guns or if we should not have guns. And my whole thing is like, when are we going to upgrade the technology? Like, why are we still shooting little pieces of metal at each other with lethal force? Like, where's the technology upgrade? You know, it says like you have the right to bear arms, but it doesn't say you have the right to lethal force. You know what I'm trying to say? Like, it doesn't say like it doesn't say you have the right to bear arms. They say, so the only arms we have are lethal weapons?
Yeah. Where it gets really weird for me is weapons that were specifically created to kill a lot of people in a very short amount of time. That is something that is legal for the general public to have access to.
Yeah, but all I'm saying is like our phones can listen to a song and tell us who played it. We're talking to each other like this over computers. You know, we got space satellites and all this kind of stuff. You're telling me that there isn't a gun that we can make, a weapon that we can make that is non-lethal, but can, and I'm not talking about like a tasers. There's got to be weapons out there. And once you, here's the thing, once we introduce that into society, the moment we introduce something that is viable, usable, non-lethal, then that changes the game. Because then if you elect to use a lethal force weapon, well, that's on you if something bad happens.
Because either that or we need to try and implement the Shazam technology on all guns. And the only way you can fire that gun at somebody else is if they're playing really bad music.
Right. Oh, my God. Hilarious. But again, too, it's like I can't get in a car unless I take a driver's test.
Yeah.
Unless I, you know, isn't that crazy? It's crazy that I can't drive a car. I can't drive a car on the road unless I go down to a government office, fill out information. And by the way, I also have to get insurance. I have to pay for insurance or I can't drive a car on the road. I have to take a test, and I have to take the test sometimes every 4 or 5 years. You have to make sure your eyesight is okay. All these things to drive a car. But any old asshole can just go down and buy a gun.
And they don't have to get insurance for it either.
Make it make sense. That's all. Like I'm not anti-gun.
Yeah.
Just like I wouldn't be anti, it would be like somebody being anti-car.
Yeah.
You know, cars are like, and not only do you have to, think about a car, you have to follow so many laws and rules. You know what I'm saying? Like, I have to stop at stop signs. I have to put on my blinker. I have to, like, you know, when I get to, I have to follow signs on the road where it says, hey, yield, and all the, I have to follow all these rules to drive this one ton killing machine. Okay. Because if I hit somebody, I could kill them. Or if I'm in a cyber truck, I could kill them. Right. I have to follow all these rules. But any asshole can get a gun and basically do whatever they want. And neither one of the sides even think of it like this. It's bananas.
I also think that there should be a licensing process to be able to procreate. And with this technology able to track us at all times now, there are certain thresholds that you cross and all of a sudden, oh, wait, you can't help but to stare at your phone while you're driving 65 miles per hour on the highway. I'm sorry. You lose your procreation abilities for the next couple of years until you can get that behavior under control.
You know what I always think about when you have a kid? It's like, the whole year, the 9 months that your wife is pregnant and they check on you. They're checking on the baby. They're checking on her. They're checking on the baby for 9 months, man. For 9 months, And then in the last trimester, it's like every week you're almost going to the doctor. Like they're like, "How you doing?" Blah blah blah, right? And then you have this baby. They give it to you and go, "Get out of here." Crazy. To me, they should be checking on us same way for a year. The same way. What do we know about being parents? I can't stand this attitude of like, just because you have a kid, you think you're an expert at kids. There is child psychology. There's child development, sociology, child medicine. People go to school for 10 years to be an expert at these fields to help you know what I mean? And you think because you had a kid, you now, everything you think about what's going on is right? This is why when people turn 35 and they go to therapy, the therapist always says, "Well, this is because of your parents. This happened to you because of." It always goes back to our parents because we're not really equipped to be parents. Like, do some work, do the work, But it's like, so that's why I agree with you. You should have to go down to the office if we want to have kids. And they're like, "Oh, okay. So what's your financial plan?" You should have to plan out things. You should have to talk about, you should have to go to a class. You know what I'm saying? You should have to go to a class about child development, child rearing, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, it should be like, no, they just got children and guns. Same issue. They shouldn't just let everybody have them,
Yeah, look, you're absolutely right about that. And other countries handle it differently from the U.S. The U.S. gives a very limited time off to the mom in most cases, much less the dad, versus giving both parents time off to really get their footing. Did y'all have that moment where after you had the baby and people would come in to visit to help out in those first couple of days that everybody left and then you're sitting in your home with just the three of you and you look at one another like, "Holy cow, we're really in this now."
You know what? To my wife's credit, Rachel's really great. She's like, she was ready. Mm. Like our place was ready. She had things I didn't even think of ready to go.
Yeah.
Organic this and that and the changing stations, and she had everything ready to go. She's like, she was born for this, And so, yeah, it was never like a, for me, I was like, okay, well, that's why I would kind of like go, "Oof." I just go, "Whew, glad I got her." You know what I mean? Because I don't know what I would do, right?
Well, you figure out very quickly as a dad that you are very worthless early on in the process. You get to do the easiest and most fun thing to initiate it all, let's say, and you can be there to support her. But ultimately, your presence is not all that necessary. It's why
I know
after we had our first kid, I was like, "All right, my goal right now is to give you whatever breaks I can to allow you a little bit more sleep or a little bit of rest, not have to worry about a little squirming being right next to you." But ultimately, we are a pathetic part of this whole process through, I'd say, the first, year and a half or so.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's so funny, too, though. Like yesterday, I was out and about. And so my wife wanted to get an IV. She wanted to get one of those foo-foo IVs. And so I had the baby in the carrier, and I'm just, while she's there, I'm walking around. And let me tell you something. When a dad is walking around with a baby by himself, you're father of the year. It's like, you don't got to do much, man. If you're pushing a stroller, people are like, "Oh my God, what a great father." And my wife is always like, she's just like, "Oh my God, I was up all night. You carry him for 30 minutes and you're father of the year."
It's a low bar that our predecessors
really is
for us, apparently.
It really is. But the thing too, though, is like my wife always gets mad too. She's like fake mad, but like, he recognizes me, I feel like, because he gets excited, Like he has a thing where I'm like, "Hey, babe," I get with him and he's just like, "Nah," you know what I mean? And she's like, oh my God, he totally knows you're here. I'm with him all day. I'm with him all day. But it's like, you know, I saw a great quote though. It's like, whatever our, however uncomfortable we are, all the discomfort we feel in, is their comfort. We have to remember that.
Mm, that's a great quote.
Yeah, you know, and it's like that, you know, it's like, so it's like, you know, when you, she can't sleep right because he's right there, and you know, whatever the thing is, it's like all that discomfort is like, it's his world, you know, like imagine the comfort he must feel of like, you know, mom's boob is just right there, you know what I mean? It's just at any time, you know, all that kind of stuff. And it's just like, so I try to remember that too. And I try to give her breaks too, like this morning, even before you hit me up, you know, it's like if I wake up and it's like, you know, 6:30, I look over and, you know, she sleeps a certain way and he's right there, he starts to get a little fussy, so I'll grab him.
Yeah.
Put him on my chest, let him sleep for as long as I can let him sleep, or I'll take him downstairs and then I let her just do her thing, you know. And it's funny what you were saying earlier about like how we, our country sucks. I totally agree with you, man. Like they just changed the laws in California actually about this, about, because so my wife was working, you know, she wanted to, I mean, she was working because she wanted to. Yeah. And you know, she became the visual merchandiser of a store. That's what she wanted. That was the goal she wanted to be. I want to be a visual merchandiser. All right. So she did it. Right. But then when it came time to like have the baby, it was like, all right. And I told her, I said, cause my mom always wanted to be a stay at home mom, you know? And so I always knew that when the time came, I would give that option to my partner, my wife, or whoever it is, you know? And so, you know, so she didn't go back to work, but there was the time that the 3 weeks passed or the 6 weeks, whatever it was, and it was time for her to go back to work if she was going to go back to work. And we were looking at each other like, how do people do this? I don't, you know, it's like my wife's breastfeeding. So like people got to pump at work, put the milk in the refrigerator if they have one at work. Like, I just thought, oh, this is a nightmare. And then I thought, my God, how do single moms do this? Like, how are single moms doing this where they have to go back to work? It's like, it's bananas to me. So I look at my situation and I'm like, well, how great. Like I didn't do anything for over a month and a half. I was just here with her, you know? And then I've had to, and then even the job that I do, like, you know, I leave out of town, I come back, but there's like times where like, I'm just home, you know? So it's like, man, I feel blessed that I could be in this situation. But just kudos, shout out to all the moms out there who don't have it like that. And you know, you're doing God's work, and keep it up, keep fighting. And you know, your kid will appreciate you later, even if they don't, if you don't feel it now. And I know how hard it is, but keep your head up and keep striving for it, because you're doing something beautiful. And you know, and those dads out there, like, you know, remember, stay in it, you know, do whatever you can to help alleviate, just give her some rest, you know, even if it's just a baby mama situation, she needs some rest, you know, because that's going to be better for your kid. I mean, it's just all these things, man. I have a whole new perspective on life because of this child, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know,
look at things so backwards here in a lot of ways. And look, America is the land of opportunity. That's not a cliche. It is truly the case that there is so much opportunity here. But with that comes a weird sort of glorification of working 60 to 80 hour weeks.
Yeah. Which
any sane person that does that, that needs the normal 7 to 9 to sometimes 10 hours of sleep, they're going to burn themselves out really quickly. But to take that time off, or to cater to a newborn or a new family, or to make an extra effort and maybe neglect work for a little bit, or just take that flat out break, is looked down upon weirdly. The tide has started to turn though, thankfully, but we're still not all the way there yet, like a lot of other countries around the world are.
Yeah, I know. But like, again, California has some dumb laws here, some stupid stuff going on.
Oh, what was the law that they changed? You started to mention that. I don't think you detailed.
They, you know, I should look it up real quick to get it completely right. But women who are now pregnant, are they can't be forced out of their job now, you know, because that happens. They can't be let go because they're pregnant, you know, and if they have to take off time, they could take off time. My wife literally took off her whole pregnancy because she was super sick at first, you know? And if you have a job where you have to do stuff, you know, and you can't do it, it's not fair that they just go, well, we're sorry, you know? And so they change. But again, I mean, there's two sides. Imagine you're an employer and you're like, my worker is not here. What am I supposed to do? So it's like, I get that. But at the same time, it's like, I'm on the other side where I'm just like, you know, we're in a situation where, you know, it is what it is. So it's like, you know, we have a weird thing here in our country. You know, they're talking about 4-day work weeks, and look, we're always chasing that carrot, man. You know, the land of opportunity means you have to go for the opportunities.
Got to grind.
So you know what I mean? So the opportunities are there. So you have to grind for them, you know? So, you know, you make sacrifices, but, you know,
well, it gets back to your point about having a kid a little bit later on, where you've already been able to put the effort into pursuing that dream. And if you've established yourself to a certain degree where that sort of thing becomes easier if you're not going to be compensated necessarily.
Yes, for sure. I do feel that. I do feel like whatever choices I'm making now are because I want to do them. And so now I can have a conversation with my wife and we could figure it out. Or now I'm in a situation where, you know, look, if I book some sitcom and I have to move to Atlanta for 6 months, it's like, all right, well, my family's coming with me. I could do that. You know, if I have to go to do a movie or something and I'm gone for 4 weeks, whatever, like, it's like, all right, babe, you want to come to this thing with me? Let's bring the baby. I mean, you know, these are all the kind of choices you can make later in life, whatever, when you're like, you know, in the business that I'm in, I'm saying, but for other people, it could be something, you know, something, whatever your choice is, could be your choice. But it's like, you know, I just think you have to like be present, because I never had a dad. So like everything I'm doing now with my kid, I never experienced. So
yeah.
I just think about that too, of just being like, all right, I want to be present. And then I hear other comics who were like, had kids and then they were like, oh, he's gone. And like, oh, I missed birthdays and all that kind of stuff. So now I look at myself now and I go, well, that'll just be a choice. So now it's like, I look at my calendar and I'm like, all right, this is blocked off now. I have to just, I can just do that if I want to. You know, it's just all the kinds of things that not everybody's in that position, but we have to try our best.
Yeah, my upbringing wasn't quite as extreme. My dad was around, but he was constantly chasing his vices. And fortunately, I had a really good, positive male role model in my grandfather to show me the right way to do things. But that's always in the back of my head.
Yeah.
I'm operating in the decisions that I make. And that's not to say that I'm perfect. I'm far from perfect. None of us are perfect. And as you mentioned, parenting is full of mistakes. And it's important for us to own those mistakes, especially to our kids when they're old enough to understand that you can still be their hero and also make mistakes. That actually humanizes you. And that's great for their long-term development as well. But it is, I think a person can go one of two ways if they have a bad parental influence in their lives. They can either become that or they can go in the opposite direction. And it sounds like you, like me, make a very concerted effort to go the opposite direction of what your paternal influence was growing up.
Yeah. Well, one of the ways that I want to affect how he looks at the world is how he looks at women. And so, and I think the way to do that is to show love, show affection, show respect to my wife, you know, just in general, but especially when he's around. You know, it's something to be like, hey, this is, you know, I want him to see, like, you know, this is how you treat your women in your life, this certain way. You know what I mean? And I think about, like, you know, where did I learn? I don't know if I did. You know what I mean? And so you just kind of go, like, you think back to your experiences of, like, especially, like, everything that is happening in the world, how people are very sensitive about things. And, you know, it's like, it's time. So it's like, oh, it starts now, you know? There's something about that. There's something about, like, hey, I'm giving my wife a hug. I'm giving my wife a kiss. I'm saying nice things to my wife. Like, hey, babe, love you. You look beautiful today. And that's just such a small thing. But if he sees that all the time, then when he's older and the women in his life, I want him to be like that. Hey, you look beautiful today. You know, let me open that door for you. Let me do this. You know what I mean? Like, whatever the thing is, whatever you consider gentlemanly or whatever, it's like, you know, it's like you just go, like, you know, don't hit women. And this is why you're stronger. And, you know, even if they, you know, show the differences, like, oh, I know you're going to want to take her head and put it into a garbage disposal because she, because you know what I mean? But he was like, no, you don't do that. And this is why. You know, all those kinds. So it's like, sometimes what I'm saying is, it's not big concepts that you want to, put forth into your kids' thinking. Sometimes it's just little small things about, you know, being nice to others, being respectful to women, being like, you know, it's all those kinds of things. I think, well, I just want to do, I'll make sure I'm doing all the things that I've learned now and things that I never got, experiences I never got. It's like, you know, that's the things you want to, like, you know, how to save money, how to, like, you know, even if you're at a restaurant, how to like be nice to people, like, you know what I mean? Like, you know, it's like, this is how you tip, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's sort of these little things that affect how people look at you that you don't even think about until later, you know? I don't know. It's like all those things is, and what I'm saying is, it's not like necessarily saying, hey, do this. I think it's about leading by example. Mm. So that's a thing too, that like, you're thinking about now. It's like, oh yeah, my wife and I have disagreements. So now it's like, oh, wow, okay. So now these disagreements have to be different. Mm. You know what I mean? That's all. Cause then it's like, you don't even realize. And then the phone too is another thing. I've seen so many videos about how little kids see their parents on the phone, and they're just like, you know, that affects them.
Yep.
You know? So it's like, all right, being present. Again, it's just about being present, showing love, making sure they feel safe, protected. And then, like, as you build up their, help them build up their character, or however that is, you know, doing chores. You know, I always tell my wife, I said, he gonna have a job. This little, you know, 15 comes and it's like, okay, did you fill out some applications? Because you'll get your ass out there and earn, you know. Oh, you want a car? Oh, okay. Here's how you do that. You know, go earn that down payment. You know what I mean? Like, I come from that school.
Yeah. And look, that starts before they're of legal working age, where they're able to do some stuff around the house to maybe earn a little bit of extra money. My 7-year-old son wants to save up for something, and we're like, all right, there's a bunch of dog poop in the backyard.
Go get it.
50 cents for every piece of dog poop that you pick up. And he earned himself, I want to say, like $15 the other day. It's like, you're, you know, trying to instill a sort of a work ethic and an understanding that your work should lead to some sort of reward or benefit for you, whether it's financial or otherwise.
Yeah, something. But, you know, who knows even if that's right? You know what I mean? Like, we're doing the best we can. And, you know,
do you think screens are the biggest challenge for parents in 2024, and not just becoming too reliant on the screen to where it essentially becomes the babysitter and ultimately you end up?
Well, they're always, I'm always looking at my whole Instagram feed now is like baby stuff.
Yeah.
And there's all that, like, you know, the screen time for kids. And it's just like, oh man, like it's so difficult. You know, I'm watching the game and he's just sitting right there with me, and you can see him looking at the colors and shapes, and he must think like, what's this? I just don't know, man. It's so, you know what I mean? Like, what are we supposed to do? Like, I grew up watching TV. Like, I don't know. You know, it's like that information on the internet is like, you know, I love those ones that'll be like things I wish I knew as a first time parent, you know, and then they give you like the litany of a list of things. I love that stuff. Cause then you can kind of pick and choose the information that you think, oh, I didn't know that, or, you know, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You know, it's
become so much trickier. Cause when you and I were kids, we would come home and watch TV or play video games. When we went back outside, that distraction wasn't there like it is for a lot of kids now. Like, I've got second and third graders, after classes, have phones or Apple Watches or Fitbits or tablets.
Yeah.
That they're allowed to have with them in school. And by the way, half the school day is also staring at screens. And I'm not trying to demonize screens altogether. They certainly have a lot of value, but there is a point of diminishing returns that I think a lot of parents in the last 10 to 15 years have fallen into a sort of trap, because initially you were given those assurances that they weren't necessarily that bad for your development. But under a certain age, anything more than brief glimpses here and there, like what you're talking about with the, you know, your son being next to you as you're watching a basketball game or something, can be bad. But it's also very reversible too, because the brains of newborns, infants, children, even adolescents are so plastic that there is always a way to turn that around. But you're creating these habits that that are hard to break once you've been doing them for so long.
Well, I think the thing too is about being active. I mean, that's a thing I see is a major thing. So it's like, you know, like with boys, you know, I see a lot of things about roughhousing with them, you know, it's like taking little boys and throwing them around.
Son and my favorite things to do together is to wrestle around. It's awesome.
So it's like that kind of stuff, going outside, having like different activities. So it's like, I think like moderation, man, like with anything, right? So it's like, all right, we're going to do this. Well, then we also have to look, because I used to go outside and play all the time. That doesn't seem to be a thing, because then the parents are just worried about like, well, who's outside? You know what I mean? Like, I used to just be in my neighborhood playing outside. You know, there'd be traffic on the street. Now you didn't worry about anything, you know? You know what I'm saying? So now it's like a thing. They're like, oh, well, we don't know what kind of creeps are outside. It sucks but the real sucky part, the irony, is the real creeps are online.
Yeah.
So that's the irony of it. So it's like, you know, as you're saying, well, I got to keep my kid inside. I don't want him to be out in the world because something might happen. It's like, no, the stuff's happening right under your nose.
Yeah. And by the way, the Amber Alert is very misleading. We've been missold on that whole thing over the years. The Amber Alert 99% of the time is some deadbeat relative taking the kid from another deadbeat relative too. Very rarely is it that Adam Walsh situation where it is a complete stranger coming and snatching your kid up off the street that you live on.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing. That's why that's why you try to build community, you know?
Oh, yeah, build that's community. Very important.
You know, so it's like, yeah, like we're finding other moms and dads around, you know, we have like, and then you just build a community. You have to, so they can be like, all right, we can watch the kids, you know, somebody has a yard. Hey, come over. I'm realizing how important that is, you know, so we're trying to, like, my wife had like a little mommy and me thing with like a couple other parents that she knows that they just have, like, they have toddlers and newborns, and they just came over and they made little art projects and with the kids and did stuff. And I was like, oh, that's great. Do more of that. You know, it's like, you know, then, you know, then the dads, you know, I have a lot of comedian dads now, you know, who are like, you know, we could talk and be like, oh, that's, like, you know, what are you doing in this case or that case? Or like, you know, I just feel like community is important, you know, finding a, like, I realize why people like, well, is it family friendly and all this kind of stuff? I see why, because you want to know your kids have a safe place to play and then you want them to play and explore and do things, right? You know, so it's like, I just feel like it's like moderation. So it's like, yeah, oh, you want to play video games? Cool. I play video games. I get it. But yeah, you also have to do this. You know,
go outside, be bored, use your imagination to get creative with the situation, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's like, oh, man, we're just trying our best, right?
Oh, that was a great parenting conversation. I did want to end with stand up because stand up is a passion of mine. I love stand up, and it's obviously a passion of yours too. It's your primary job. Yes, I am jealous about that. You're back in Austin this weekend for your second weekend of headlining at the Mothership.
Yeah, the great best club in the country, man. I've been everywhere, and there's just nothing better than just the vibe, the feel, the green room, the sound system, the way you're treated. Nowhere else in the country is going to treat you the way Joe Rogan and the people, Adam Egan and them over there, how they treat you. It's great. I think sadly, I think the shows are already sold out. You know, if you're trying to get tickets,
they are.
You know, but that's what they do there. All the weekends sold out, but you know, I'll be back.
A cool offshoot of you as a comic is that you're about to direct Matt Rife's upcoming, his new crowd work special. And
you're
performing with Matt at Netflix as a Joke in the Los Angeles area coming up here pretty soon. How did you and Matt initially connect?
Oh, man, he was like 14, 15. And he just was like, he was very persistent. He would send messages on Twitter. You know, he would just be like, hey, I'm a comic, boom, boom, and he just like nonstop, right? To the point where you're just like, who is this kid? You know? And then we just started talking, connected. And then I said to him, I was like, look, I'm going to be in Pittsburgh. He said to me, he was like, oh, I see you're in Pittsburgh. And I was like, well, if you want to come do some guest sets, and he did. He got on a bus, a Greyhound bus, and rode a bus from Cleveland or wherever he was. And he bombed horribly. It was hilarious. And then we just bonded ever since, you know, when he came to LA for the first time, when he knew he wanted to move to LA, he stayed with me for a month, you know, It's like we've been like that, you know. It's like I feel like I learned fatherhood by being in his life, you know.
Interesting.
Just things like that, you know. It's like people don't even realize we were very close, you know. Like up to a year and a half ago, he was on my phone plan. You know what I mean? Like that's our relationship, you know. So now I'm like, wait, am I gonna get on your phone plan now? You know. So it's like, you know, so it's great to see him do what he's doing, and I like being a part of it.
So Matt's so interesting because in comedic circles, he's very polarizing because a lot of people feel like he skipped the line. But as you just said, it's not like
no. He's been doing this for 12 years.
Exactly.
He's been working hard
for a while, but that still rankles some people because he's found success sooner than they have, and they've been grinding for 20 plus.
It is what it is. And I tell him, who cares? He just bought his forever home. You know, he is starting where people want to end, you know? So it's like, it's totally fine. Like you're always going to have haters. This is a tough business and there's no right or wrong way to do this. Like, it's like embrace what it is. The internet is what it is. I mean, I could be a person that could be like, what the hell? I've been busting my ass for 20 years and I don't have success like that. I have my own success. And it's just like, that's just how it is. You know, exactly. He's a charming guy. His comedy is very charming. It's very much like disarming the way he like does crowd work with people. It's not the usual like, hey, what do you do, blah blah blah. He's got a very special way he does it. He's been working hard and people gravitate towards it. Listen, you don't know what people want to hear and who they want to hear it from. That's the people decide that. We don't get to decide that. We don't get to say, well, I'm going to do this, 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 and this, and then the people are going to come. That's not how it works. The people let you know that they want to hear from you. And if they don't, sorry, it didn't work out the way you want it. It's just, that just is what it is.
I am in that handful of people who loved I'm Dying Up Here several years ago. And
man, we needed one more season.
I know it was the perfect cliffhanger also, by the way, but Showtime had to do what they had to do, I guess. I feel like Eric, because we are in a golden era of stand-up now that's been going on for the last couple of years. If that show had fired up just a couple years later, it would probably still be going on right now. Do you agree with that?
Oh, for sure. For sure. If they would have found their way. But listen, man, there's a lot of behind the scenes stuff that I can't talk about that. Like, but the only thing I'll say is this: shows on a network like Showtime need two things to survive. And they need one of these two things to be great: viewership and critical acclaim. If you have critical acclaim, then the I don't know why those balloons came. That was weird.
That was the perfect timing, by the
way. Yeah. It's weird. If you get critical acclaim, then, you know, they'll be like, oh, okay, people are watching this and they can sell it a certain way. Or if there's like a viewership, there's a people really love this show and they're watching it. We were tepid on both. So it is what it is, you know? So it's like, as much as people really loved the show, they say, it wasn't enough people that loved the show. It wasn't enough people that, like, you know, understood even what the show was. I mean, and I think that was what the issue was from the very beginning. I think Showtime got into business with Jim Carrey thinking they were going to get comedies, and they got something completely different. And I don't think it's what they wanted.
Which isn't surprising because Jim Carrey also has the ability to get serious too. And if you,
I know it's, and that's what, you know, but I don't even know if even he wanted the show the way it was, because there's this thing called the upfronts, you know, and it's like, you know, new shows come out or the new season of a show comes out and there's like a big press junket, you know, and that's where you go, and we're there, and even up to that point they're discussing whether it was a comedy or a drama.
Like the
executive there was like, well, we still haven't decided, boom, boom, boom. And I was like, what? And I remember saying, well, if we're going to get an award, who would get the award and what would it be? And it would probably have been Melissa Leo. And I was like, is she going to get best comedy actress? You know, I don't think so. It would have been, you know, So then there's like, you know, here's this drama. So, and then, you know, it was tough. You know, it was like, it was tough to like, to, for it to end the way it did. And, you know, but, you know, it is one of those things. I feel like it would have been like, I feel like it would have been on still on the air, like Shy on, nobody watches that show. Like, I don't know one person that watches that show. Not one person. It's still on the air. We came out at the same time. It's just one of those things. It got a lot of critical acclaim. It got a, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I just, it baffles my mind when I look at, like, so I know that there's more things to it than just what I, even what I'm saying is what I'm telling you.
I'd like to put that show in a garbage disposal. So I'm dying up here. Could still be around, but alas, here we are.
Yeah, here we are. So we'll see what we'll see, you know. Well, you know, and we still got reruns of Workaholics, so you can always watch that too.
No doubt. That's a great show too. All right, last question now, Eric. I love stand-up. You love stand-up. What do you love about stand-up?
I love that here is a group of strangers. Like there's, you know, 300 seats at the mothership, I believe it is, right? You know, 300, 275, 300, right? So here's like 300 people who, for the most part, don't know each other. For the most part, have different religious beliefs, economical beliefs, economical standings, different, like, you know, this men, this women, there's old, different ages, and they're all together and they're sitting and they're collectively agreeing with me with their laughter. Or disagreeing with me with their laughter. That's magic.
Yes, it is. He is Eric Griffin. Check out his work at ericgriffin.com. You can also connect with him on social media there. And you can hear his excellent podcast, Riffin' with Griffin. Sometimes there are guests. You had a former employer of mine, Phil Hendry, on a few weeks back.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Phil, what a great guy. Yeah. Dude,
great dude and one of the most brilliant radio minds of all time. I mean, that guy, the way he's able to channel his potential split personality disorder is second to none. But that podcast is great. And if you have a chance, not here in Austin this weekend, but do check him out somewhere live at a city near you. Eric, this is a real pleasure. Thanks for joining me once again.
No problem, man. Thank you.
From Austin.
Thank you.
Thanks to Gentleman Jesus for the intro and outro music. Hear more of his work at gentlemanjesus.com. And thanks to you for hanging out. For more of the show and to connect on social media, visit booksonpod.com. We'll talk to you next time on Books on Pod.